Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, March 11, 2022. A lawmaker in South Sudan says the country's unpaid contributions to regional blocs have accumulated to millions of dollars.
As we speak now, we are in arrears to the tune of close to $39.8 million. This year, we need to pay $7 million as the annual subscription fee. We also remember to the Greater Lakes region, where we have an arrears amounting to $600,000.
And Sudan turns to gold to boost its economy.
Hamati says one of the most important resources that can help boost Sudan's economy is the gold. He says security forces have arrested a lot of people smuggling gold, 40 buyers in all.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A lawmaker in South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly is expressing concern about the amount of money the country owes regional bodies in Africa. The chairperson of the Specialized Committee for Regional Integration and East African Affairs Committee in the National Legislative Assembly says South Sudan has yet to clear $39 million it owes the East African community. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
Iche Lakia Barry Wanje, chairperson of the Committee for Regional Integration and East African Affairs Committee in the National Legislative Assembly, says the East African Community member states are expected to pay $8 million in annual fees. He says the current arrears show Juba has not met its financial obligation to the East African Community for close to 4 years.
As we speak now, we are in arrears to the tune of close to $39.8 million. This year, we need to pay $7 million as the annual subscription fee. We also remember to the Greater Lakes region, where we have an arrears amounting to $600,000.
Aside from owing millions of dollars to the EAC, Wanja says South Sudan has also accumulated unpaid arrears to the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, the Northern Corridor Transit and Transport Coordination Authority, and other bodies totaling more than $50 million.
We also member to the Northern Corridor, which is within our domain as a committee. It's the same issue of arrears. As you know, we're kicked out of the guard. We have arrears to the tune of $8 million plus. And it's about time we as South Sudan, we take these things very seriously, because our reputation is on the line as a country.
Wanja says the problem was brought to the president's notice 3 weeks ago. He says South Sudan remains committed to paying off all its outstanding debt to regional bodies. Abraham Kohl, a professor of political science at the University of Juba, says South Sudan risks isolation from regional bodies due to its huge debt.
South Sudan currently will not be able to benefit from the regional organizations because they will not be able to get the positions that they should be able to present from the regional organization. Their boys also, the fact that they are in conflict and there is a political crisis within the country, the regional organization will not be able to commit themselves 100% in trying to resolve the issues of the region. And as a result of this, it will result into South Sudan being isolated by the region, and the crisis will continue to worsen as time goes.
Wanja points out that economic constraints have generated economic shocks in recent years, making it difficult for the country to meet its financial responsibilities to regional bodies. He says South Sudan should make more of an effort to pay all off its outstanding debt to regional bodies.
The only solution and the only remedy is for us to clear our arrears in good faith and in goodwill, cognizant with the fact, you know, IGAD was part and parcel of the negotiation of the peace process. We cannot beat around the bush. We just have to honor, you know, we just have to honor our commitments and pay up.
South Sudan was suspended from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, in December 2021 due to its overdue payments. Professor Akul advises the government to pay at least 50% of what it owes to the regional bodies, noting that being a member of such organization carries certain benefits.
If South Sudan would have paid, some of this money could have come back to the country in terms of our top people being employed in those organizations. That I think the government need to come up with a strategy on how to change the reputations of this country from the regional organizations. And this strategy should be rolled out to be very clear that from step one, South Sudan now is going to veil themselves out of this regional financial crisis by doing 1, 2, 3.
In 2020, the East African Legislative Assembly passed a motion condemning South Sudan for not paying its annual subscription fees, urging the Council of Ministers to take additional measures against the country. South Sudan owed the East African community more than $24 million at the time. For VOA News, I am Sheila Oponi in Juba.
Still on money issues, Sudan's military rulers have announced an emergency committee to address the country's collapsing economy. Sudanese authorities are also exploring ways to use gold mining as a possible boost to the country's economy. Sudan's ambassador to Russia denies reports that Moscow has been smuggling gold from Sudan in preparation for sanctions over its invasion of Ukraine. But Sudanese analyst says gold smuggling is rampant, including to Russia, as Sama Khatir reports from Khartoum.
State media on Thursday said the ruling Sovereign Council's second-in-command, General Mohamed Hamdan Daglu, known as Himeti, met with gold miners who vowed to supply the central bank with gold. The report came after Himeti gave a rare press statement this week on efforts to prevent the country's economic collapse. Sudan's exports dropped 85% in January, and prices for everything are quickly rising. One of the main sparks for the 2019 uprising that led the military to oust former President Omar al-Bashir. In remarks to media Monday, Himeti announced an economic emergency committee to address the issues. Among other measures, he pointed to Sudan's gold mining, which amounts to at least 50 tons per year, as a potential solution. Himeti says one of the most important resources that can help boost Sudan's economy is the gold. He says security forces have arrested a lot of people smuggling gold, 40 buyers in all. He says the buyers are not the problem and asks from whom are they buying this gold. That's the question, he says, adding, we will find out. Himeti gave no details on the nationalities of those arrested, the timing, or who was suspected of buying how much smuggled gold. His comments came just days after a report in the British Telegraph newspaper said Russia prepared for sanctions over its Ukraine invasion by buying smuggled Sudanese gold. Himeti didn't comment on the allegation in his remarks. Late last month, Himeti began a week-long visit to Moscow as much of the world was criticizing Russia for preparing to invade its neighbor. The Kremlin's invasion began as Himeti met with Russian officials to discuss expanding and strengthening cooperation with Sudan. After the general's trip to Moscow, he reaffirmed a Bashir-era deal for Russia to open a navy base in Port Sudan, which, if carried out, would be Russia's first in Africa. Sudan's foreign ministry spokesman refused to comment on the allegations of Russian gold smuggling. But in a written response to VOA through a messaging application, Sudan's acting ambassador to Russia, Onur Ahmed Onur, dismissed the claims. I have nothing to say other than it's fake news and a story created from the imagination of the Telegraph reporter, read the text. Himeti commands the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, which grew out of the Janjaweed militias that human rights groups say committed crimes against humanity in Sudan's Darfur region. Analysts say the RSF is itself involved in gold smuggling. Salah Haddouma is Dean of Political Science at Omdurman Islamic University.
يعني أكيد من مصادر متعددة وليس من السودان فقط He says Russian surely obtained gold from several sources, not only Sudan. But yes, says Adoma, Sudan is one of the countries that the Russian companies managed to benefit from with secret agreements with the RSF and other entities like the former ruling National Congress Party. He says Russia, like many countries, benefited from smuggling Sudanese gold. The RSF office refused to take a call from VOA seeking comment on the allegations. A spokesman at Sudan's Ministry of Minerals confirmed to VOA that two Russian gold mining companies are operating in the country, Ilyans and Miru Gold, a subsidiary of M Invest. But the ministry spokesman would not comment on allegations of gold smuggling. A 2019 report by CNN says M Invest, a Russian company linked to the Kremlin and Russian mercenaries, was heavily involved in smuggling gold out of Sudan. CNN reported in 2019 that M Invest, a mining company the U.S. says is owned by Russian President Vladimir Putin's ally, Yevgeny Prigozhin, also advised Sudanese authorities how to quash public protests. Authorities say Prigozhin is behind the Wagner group of Russian mercenaries that UN experts have accused of human rights abuses from Syria to Libya to the Central African Republic. While it is not clear to what extent the Russian companies are still involved in Sudan's gold mining, analysts say most of it has been off the books. Senhori Isa is former head of economics at Sudan's largest newspaper, Al Ray Al Aam. He says exporting Sudan's gold to Russia remains a smuggling operation, as is the case with nine other neighboring countries of Sudan. The export is probably done through the United Arab Emirates UAE, says Isa, through Khartoum International Airport. The only outlet is the UAE, he says, where Sudan's smuggled gold gets refined and stamped as an Emirate product, then re-exported. It was not possible to independently verify Isa's claims. Sudan was headed for international relief from lenders but was cut off from foreign assistance after an October military coup overthrew the transitional government formed after al-Bashir ouster. Since the coup, ongoing street protests against military rule have left at least 85 people dead. Samah Khatir for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
Kenyan artisans say they are losing the market for their products to Chinese imports. According to craftspersons, the high quality and low prices of Chinese-made goods put them at a disadvantage. Victoria Amunga reports for VOA from Nairobi.
An African Union study on international trade finds that the African continent is the largest market for Chinese goods. Some Kenyan consumers prefer the wide variety of the cheap products. Mary Wambui is one such buyer.
There's always variety. All the time you get new products and they have different types, and you don't get the same ones all the time. So every time you come, there's something new that has come up.
Wohoro Ndoho, an economist in Kenya, says a lack of strong automation and technology in Kenyan manufacturing means most products made locally are by craftspeople, not machines.
The Juakali sector in Kenya has very much been human power driven rather than machine driven. And so you find that it inevitably means when things are made in China, they can be made in bulk, they're made by machine. While we compete, they still meet up those karais for cooking mandazis with hands. And for every hour they make one, a machine can make 1,000.
The Kenya National Federation of Juakali Association told VOA that imports from China have cost them the regional market. Engineer Charles Kalomba is the Secretary General of the Artisans Federation.
Energy saving tickles, which have got a liner, a clay liner, and they have just a metal, fabricated metal and the clay liner, and we used to produce a lot of it for the East African region. Today, there's a lot of influx of the same into the market.
Data from the Kenya Export Promotion and Branding Agency show that South Africa is the only African country among the top 25 nations exporting to China. Kenyan authorities are banking on the trade agreements to sell more to China. The agency's chief executive officer, Wilfred Marube, explains.
And there was a bilateral engagement in January, whereby some of the areas which were agreed upon and also a joint committee established was to basically to ask the question, how does the Chinese government and the Kenyan government work together to increase market access to Kenyan products, especially the agricultural products?
Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Senegalese President and Chair of the African Union, Macky Sall, has asked Russian President Vladimir Putin to seek a lasting ceasefire in Ukraine. Sall's talk with Putin comes just a week after Senegal abstained from a UN vote to condemn the Russian invasion. As Anika Hamschlag reports from Dakar, African nations have interest in seeing an end to the war, but also not in upsetting Putin.
Sall's request as chairman of the African Union Wednesday was a contrast to his actions as Senegalese president a week prior, when Senegal joined 16 other African nations in abstaining from a UN vote to condemn the Russian invasion. Senegal is considered a beacon of democracy in West Africa, so the move came as a surprise to many. Joseph Siegel is the director of research for the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He says the vote reflected Senegal's posture of non-alignment, similar to many other African countries over the years. It isn't a vote of support for Russia, he says, but a vote for trying to maintain neutrality. Russia has a plethora of business dealings throughout the African continent. Senegal, for example, signed a $300 million deal with Russian oil company Lukoil just last year. The company also has operations in Cameroon, Egypt, Ghana, and Nigeria. Russian mining companies are also active throughout Africa, from extracting diamonds in Angola to aluminum in Guinea and uranium in Namibia. Most notably, Moscow is Africa's leading supplier of weapons. Since 2015, it signed military agreements with more than 20 African countries. Furthermore, private Russian military companies with close ties to the Kremlin have gained an increasingly strong foothold in African countries such as Mali and the Central African Republic. So, while it may be in the best interest of many African countries to avoid tension with the Kremlin, leaders are beginning to feel the ripple effect of the war. Abdurahman Cham is the head of the Political Science Department at Dakar's University of Cheikh Anta Diop. He says Russia is a country that exports a lot of products, like gas and raw materials such as wheat, and that that can have an economic impact, especially with regards to trade. Luckily, the African Union does have some sway, Cham says. He says international relations are not only decided by major world powers. The African Union is still a regional institution that can be considered an influential voice. Russia also needs Africa, he added, and it's in their best interest to listen to the African Union. In a statement about the call, the Kremlin referred to the invasion as a special military operation to protect Donbas and did not mention Sall's request for a ceasefire. Instead, it stated that Russia was asked to safely evacuate foreign citizens and said both leaders had reaffirmed their commitment to further develop Russia-African relations. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Still on Russia, aid groups say the number of people displaced by conflict in Burkina Faso in January spiked to 160,000, bringing the total displaced in the country to 1.7 million. The aid groups worry the crisis stemming from Russia's invasion in Ukraine will draw much-needed humanitarian fundings away from Africa's Sahel region. Henry Wilkins reports from neighboring Ivory Coast.
The spike in displacements comes amid a six-year conflict with armed groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda and a military coup on the 23rd of January, which saw a military junta come to power in the West African country. Since January 2019, non-profits say the displaced population in Burkina Faso has grown by 2,000%, with over 1.7 million people now uprooted. Tom Pere-Costa is spokesperson for the Norwegian Refugee Council, NRC, in West and Central Africa.
There are increasing numbers of attacks, the destruction of crops, the theft of livestock, which are preventing families to access their fields and their food stocks. So faced with the inability to feed their families, people have had to flee and move towards towns.
Pere Costa added that some donors have said they might reduce aid funding for Burkina Faso as money is diverted to the crisis in Ukraine.
Some donors have already indicated that they would proceed to a 70% cut of our funding to support operations in Ukraine, and we are very concerned that this will become a trend.
Burkina Faso's military junta, led by President Paul-Henri Damiba, has said it hopes to restore security to the country and allow people displaced by the conflict to return home. Asked if security has improved for Burkina Faso since the start of 2022, Paul Melly, an analyst with London-based think tank Chatham House, sounded cautiously optimistic.
The security situation in Burkina Faso has begun to improve in some respects. We've seen some significant successes for the armed forces, but it's still too early to say whether the military's commitment to improved, sustained success in tackling jihadist violence, whether we're really seeing results in that respect.
He points out that many of the recent successes for the military resulted from closer cooperation with French forces, which was instigated by ousted President Roch Kabore. Alexandra Lamarche is senior advocate for West and Central Africa at Refugees International, a Washington-based non-profit.
Russia is one of the leading grain exporters in the world. As the international community cuts economic ties with Russia, we can expect a global shortage. In sub-Saharan Africa, this shortage will leave additional people in need of emergency food assistance, many of which may not have otherwise required aid.
She says the crisis in Ukraine will have devastating effects on crises across sub-Saharan Africa, not just in Burkina Faso. She added that if donor attention is singularly focused on Ukraine in the coming weeks, it may be too late to mitigate the consequences of widespread food insecurity. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ivory Coast.
We'd love to hear your feedback on stories aired on this program. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We heard from several of you about the importance of respecting women during our coverage of the week of the International Women's Day, such as Natalie Kazito Nguya from Yambio Health Science Institute, who writes, "Hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. It's not good for men to ignore our female leaders. We should respect them and give them equal rights. They have the right to hold the position of governor and others. They also have a vision for this country, South Sudan." Daniel Dut Dagbai from Ragmajok in Lake State says, "Hello VOA, what a man can do, a woman can do also. Let us try to respect and honor women leadership because they are fair and transparent in whatever they do. Honorable Governor of Western Bahr Ghazal State, perform your duties beyond our expectations. The entire government of Western Bahr Ghazal is behind you." Martin Manuel Wugol in Uganda writes, "John and Nabil, good morning. Allow me to congratulate South Sudanese women upon the well-deserved International Women's Day celebration, a day women reflect on challenges they endured when working for families, particularly rural women who suffered in silence for years. Happy Women's Day to Juba Monitor Editor-in-Chief Honorable Anna Niminerano, the only female editor in the country, for her heroic service and dedication to the country she loves." Mabor Alatrengo in Rumbek Lake State says, "Hello VOA News Desks. As the world celebrates International Women's Day on 8th of March every year, I would like to give much appreciation to my mother, Teresa Nilweth Manuel Ater, for her care and support since from her womb until the time I grew up. Dear mother, you have been my role model. You opened my path by educating me to become an intellectual. Thank you, mother. I have nothing to give you, but God will reward you." Majak Marco Majong from Warab State says, "I am very sorry for what happened in Rabkona County of Unity State between cattle keepers of Sudan and those of South Sudan, which led a number of people to die during the cattle raiding. This is something which I describe as a violation of bilateral relations between two countries. Let the government of the two countries look into that matter seriously." Angonga Iwen Lueth from Gumbo Sharkat in Juba says, "Hello John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. I welcome the resolution by the Dean Board of Juba University and other public universities. The collapse of the country is practically visible when the self-sacrificing lecturers of the nation beg their government to pay them, when it's something that's not a choice for the government to pay them. The lecturers deserve to be paid like MPs due to their responsibilities. They deserve a living wage." Saber Isaac Hamiz of Yambio in Western Equatoria State says, Hi, VOA in South Sudan in Focus. The transitional government of South Sudan must improve the welfare of its own civil servants by releasing their salaries on time. Tampering with salaries, which is chapter one, is very bad now. Look at the situation at Juba University, whereby lecturers have gone on strike at the time when students are doing exams. I call upon the country leadership to sort out the issue of civil servant salaries. Joel Philip Kwan in Bor Town of Jungle State writes, "Hello VOA, I'm very tired of hearing universities, civil servants and organized forces weren't paid. If our government is a real government, then it should be serious about paying arrears to all lecturers and all civil servants. Plus, organized forces should be paid on time because we all know when the government delays salaries of those institutions. How should their families survive when they require daily basic necessities? The government should be serious about paying our salaries on time." Isaac Men Matyang from Juba says, "Hello VOA, I'm appealing to Russia to end the invading war against the people of Ukraine. Killing women, children and elders is not acceptable in the eyes of humanity. So as a whole world, we call for peace to prevail for the Ukrainian people at this difficult time of war, devastating their country's innocent lives." Peter Data from Yumbe District in Bidibidi Refugee Settlement in Uganda says, "It's so sad to hear when people are dying in South Sudan's Eastern Equatorial State and Europe's Ukraine. Why are people dying like flies in the world? My message is we need peace and reconciliation if anyone did wrong." Ayeniak Dao in Jebel Lemun Juba says, "The conflict between cattle herders and the host community in Magwi County needs immediate intervention by Jonglei State government to make the cattle keepers return to Jonglei because their presence in the state will reduce instability." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3 of Bor Town says, "The series of attacks by Miseria militias into South Sudan territory is a violation of sovereignty, which needs to be addressed by both countries because it was in Abyei last week and Unity this week where lives and property were lost and families were displaced from their residential areas." James Roy Majok from Unity State in Bantu Town says, "Hi Nabil and John Tanza. The South Sudan government and the Sudan government should address daily insecurities along the border between the neighboring countries. Last week on Sunday, Miseria attacked a cattle camp in Panakwaj near Hijlij oil field. 7 youth were killed and 7 others were wounded. The same scenario happened in Abyei on the same day. We need peace rather than returning to war." Jacob Dior Machueng from Ural in Lake State says, "The conflict in Abyei needs national intervention, not committees as it used to be in this country. It's a pity that the Dinka Ngok of Abyei are being fought by Arab nomads, the Miseria from the north, and their brothers from Twitch of Warab State. My heart goes out to the families who lost their lives. May their souls rest in peace." Robert Nyombe in the Bidibidi Refugee Settlement writes, "The number of guns controlled by the civilians in South Sudan is just too much. How can everyone own a gun? How are these guns accessed by the people? Unless everyone is disarmed in the country, it will not be easy for the citizens to carry on their activities. Cattle rustling, road ambushes, and the looting of people's property will continue. Thanks for your time." The views presented here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate you sharing with us what you think. Keep those comments coming.
Keep your comments brief and we will sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end this show with Duk Kut and the song Pir Aher. We have been listening to Duk Kut and the song Pir Aher. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.